Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome back to Womansplain. It's Brooke and Sola. And today we're going to discuss family businesses and the history of family influence in high-end and luxury and consumer brands. I think what's most top of mind right now within the consumer and department store space is Nordstrom, who historically was one of the premier department stores across the United States, originally starting in Seattle, has been a public company since the early 70s, but now their family is actually in the middle of a deal to take it private, which is interesting.
Yeah, let's start with the history.
Yeah.
So Nordstrom was started as a shoe company back in 1901 by John Nordstrom, I believe. And it really is a family business. They really grew it throughout the 1900s, I guess. And then in the 70s, as Brooke mentioned, it went private on NASDAQ. And they went through lots of different Nordstrom members as CEO. And then right now it's co-owned by two brothers. And as Brooke mentioned, they are in talks of going back private. So we can talk a little bit about why they would, you know, think to do that and some of the pros and cons there.
Yeah, absolutely. We've mentioned on previous episodes just this general trend of companies being taken private, especially companies that are under significant scrutiny. Department stores have obviously had a lot of struggles in the past, honestly, 10 to 20 years, but especially post-pandemic. You know, everything from Neiman's to Bergdorf's. And even Barney's closing in New York City is just really representative of like how difficult it is for department stores to keep up in today's just huge e-commerce economy. Nordstrom did historically have a good internet presence. You know, they started Nordstrom.com pretty early 2000s, and they had a pretty revolutionary, you know, use of the Nordstrom mobile app. And they also like their anniversary sale and online anniversary sale through like their Nordstrom Club has been really like a huge driver of revenue for them, you know, every August and September. And they also have been dedicated, I think, in my opinion, Nordstrom is a very good target market where it's a department store that obviously has nice brands, but it's very much like accessible to the average American. So they have like, you know, high-end brands for sure that they have, but they also have, you know, a large variety of like the expense and type of brands they have, and also do a good job of keeping up with trends. So it's and they have like a large variety of both men's and women's items that have, it's honestly always felt like a luxury experience to shop at Nordstrom, especially, you know, like the new ones that they have in New York City and the Upper West Side. And they've really tried to kind of buy into this experiential shopping. But they also have been, the expense is not something that's so high end like a Bergdorf or a Neiman's that like the average person absolutely cannot afford to shop there. So I think that's been really good for them. However, they've struggled in terms of being public because department stores have struggled generally.
Right.
You know, a few years ago, the current bid was would have been double to take it private. And I think, you know, the brothers are seeing that it's just very difficult to accompany, you know, a business like this, almost like, you know, a Soho House too, that has just so much real estate, so much fixed costs, and is being just eaten into terms of market share because of e-commerce. And also think they really need to kind of try to change it in order to appeal to the younger consumer, where they're struggling to continuously appeal to the Gen Z and millennial. So I think that is really sort of what, you know, is behind them trying to take it private. I think they're going to be able to refocus its target and be able to maybe like, you know, not be under the same level of scrutiny as a public company.
Yeah. And just talking about their financials, I know in 2023, they did $14 billion in revenue.
Wow.
Which is actually $800 million down from the year prior.
Yeah.
Of course, during COVID, the sales really took a hit. But in 21, I think they came back in terms of sales with Barney's closing, as you mentioned. I think they got a lot of that target demographic. One thing I think that is really helping them now is they're actually opening a lot more stores in New York. They're focusing a lot on Nordstrom Rack.
Okay.
Which is like the kind of lower end type of department store.
Yeah.
On, you know, sale
it's like
items.
Discount store, you know, equivalent. Like, yeah, Saks Off Fifth is the same
right,
thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so I think that's in their business plan a lot. And in 2025, they are going to open more stores, brick and mortar in large cities. So I think, that is definitely a way for them to grow and kind of tap into this market that they haven't really been in before. So once they're able to, you know, be private again and not be under scrutiny, they can focus their efforts on actually growth expansion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think they you know, obviously that is a huge amount of revenue. And I think they are going to be able to pick up some of this loss too on the lower end, especially focusing on Nordstrom Rack, kind of like these lower end department stores that have honestly shuttered, like everything from Sears, Macy's, JCPenney that effectively doesn't really exist anymore. I think it would be good for them, especially with the Nordstrom Rack focus, to be able to pick up that market share. And it will be easier to do that as a private company, because obviously in order to invest in growth, you do need to, you know, compress your margins, like, in order to like effectively become a better company. Mm-hmm. And so doing that from a public company will just hit your valuation so hard, and there'll be so much scrutiny around growth investment that it'll be really difficult to do. And they've already had such like a hit to their stock price that, I mean, it will cause investors and equity researchers to even maybe short Nordstrom, which will just hurt it so much that they may run out of cash flow in order to really hit that, like in order to hit the growth that they want. So being able to take it private, kind of invest in growth without that level of scrutiny, without the risk of becoming a short stock, I think is really smart. And personally, I think Nordstrom does objectively like do well in terms of capturing what like the average like middle American wants, and it like provides a really luxury experience, you know, versus like a Neiman's Bergdorf's Barney, like Barney's is always trying to hit this like top 1%. It's trying to, you know, basically appeal to the most sophisticated shopper out there, and the answer is that's not the majority of America at all. And Nordstrom has always done a very good job of being like, these are really nice things. Like, we have a variety of brands. We've like, we've selected things that are in the moment, that are of trend, that are also affordable. And even though they will carry some expensive items, it's a lot more of a variety. And I personally feel like, you know, way more comfortable to Nordstrom than something like that, because it will have brands that I like. But will also be, you know, selected in terms of things that are not completely out of price. So, and they have a nice, always have a nice shopping experience as well. And I think they've like focused on that as, you know, it's like opening new stores and even having like the men's store, where like Nordstrom men's is like historically done really well for them as well. So I think that's really great. And we'll see. And I honestly think it is a good idea for them to do it now.
Yeah, and you mentioned around 6 years ago, they were also going to go public. It got shut down by the board. It would have been $50 a share versus $23 a share. So we can talk a little bit about, I guess, what the actual deal is. And so I think currently the family owns 30% stake. This deal would bring their stake up to 50.1%, so the majority. And then the Mexican department store, I think it's called Liverpool, is going to come in the deal as well. I think the overall deal is a $3.8 billion deal. They're going to have some, I think, like $250 million in financings to kind of buy back all the shares. So it's definitely a big, you know, deal on the market. I know we've seen a couple of similar type of take privates or like majority stake or buyout type of deals for department stores. I know Macy's just was looking at one, and that didn't go through. I think Saks is looking at also going private, or maybe I think it's private, right?
It's already,
So lots of different types of similar type of deals, I guess, in the market. So I'd be curious to, you know, kind of see if this is the trend moving forward. I know we talked a lot about, you know, companies going public and then back to private. So really interesting.
I think it is interesting because a lot of these, I think, iconic names that have been public for so long, I think historically being a public company was like the end all be all as a goal of a successful company, you know, being able to ring that bell. And I think today it is just not like that, especially with companies that are not necessarily have the easiest business models, especially ones that have like heavy like fixed costs in real estate. I think it's just so tough to be under that level of scrutiny constantly while also trying to adapt to really like very changing consumer taste and very changing consumer needs. And so I honestly like the fact that Nordstrom is going private. I think it's going to be good for them. And I also think having like more clear instruction, honestly, having a private company allows for a lot more clarity and direction because there is just like one person leading your company and your target versus having like the opinions of the entire world. So I think that that will be good for the company itself. And I am excited to see kind of how they grow and change. And I think we've seen these trends in a lot of sort of similar type companies like a Samsonite, et cetera, that were popular at one point and sort of need to adapt, and they need to effectively recreate themselves in order to continue to succeed. So I'm thinking of even like Nike. Like now they've had, you know, they've struggled recently. They had another CEO change. And I wonder if like taking them private would be interesting as well, because honestly, Nike obviously has been, you know, iconic. The only, they were the first athleisure athletic brand. They were the first brand to sponsor athletes. They have been basically every athlete sponsor forever, but they kind of tried a lot of things that didn't go very well. And there's like all these newer, you know, from Aloe to Lululemon to everything that have really eating into this market share for them.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and you know, they tried to do like golf and that didn't work out. And so that would be another one that I can kind of see going private too. So I think it's really interesting. And I'm excited to see what Nordstrom does.
And I like this whole trend of kind of going back to brick and mortar. Because I think we started out in that. And like, of course, there was the e-commerce era with COVID. But now, like in New York City, there's so many brick and mortar stores. And like, I do a lot of shopping, most of my shopping online. But also like now I've been kind of going into stores a lot more. You mentioned Nike. Like I was just at like the Fifth Avenue Experience store getting my marathon shoes. So, I mean, like without that, like I would not have bought, you know, the products. So I really like how they're kind of focusing on that. Hopefully the trend kind of goes that way. I know retail is definitely on the decline right now. You know, real estate's super expensive, but I mean, I think there's a new era of like this consumer wanting to kind of experience the in-store type of experience and kind of merge that with the online shopping too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think given just the nature of the economy and the fact that, you know, obviously inflation and that wages are struggling and like, you know, the average American is, I think, struggling right now in terms of financially, having like the ability to have like a small experience, I feel like I said is really nice. So, and like, that's effectively free, even though it goes along with your shopping of something you need, like running shoes. I think it makes people feel like, yes, like, okay, maybe I can't take my vacation this year, but I can have like a small experience. And that is like, that's a huge thing that happens like in downturns that like, you know, things like Starbucks will do really well in a recession because people will give up other luxuries. Like, okay, maybe I can't go out to eat anymore, but I can still afford coffee. And so they'll actually like spend more on smaller experiences because they have to cut larger luxuries. And so I wonder, especially like a Nordstrom, that's like, honestly, like there may be consumers that are now kind of going down in like the level of luxury that they can afford are still able to basically curate a luxury experience for the average consumer. And I actually really like how Nike is doing that too, because Nike's objectively cheaper than like Lulu and the Aloe. And is honestly, it also is more variety. Like it definitely has more like men's options and things like that. And probably like the average age is like more various as well. So I think like focusing on the experience is a really good idea. And I like that too. It's like, it's a good activity as well for the American. So I do like that. And I know obviously that we've talked about like that's a huge trend of like the LVMH like experience, etc., but I think it'll be great. So and obviously, I mean, you got to go and buy your marathon shoes at Nike, so we love that.
Of course.
Like Sol's running the New York Marathon, everyone, for the second time. She's so tiny too. I do not understand. I saw her last year and I was like, oh my god, she's so fast, and her legs are half the size of everyone. I literally lost her in the crowd. I'm like, where's my little champion?
Yes, I will be talking about that.
Yeah, we got to do a marathon episode. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll do a live stream on Women's Plan.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I've literally never live streamed, but maybe I should learn.
That'll be fun. Cool. Yeah. No, we'll see how this deal, if it goes through, and the future of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stores.
And I think it'll be interesting to see how the family dynamic shifts too. So that is the only risk where, I mean, obviously, it seems like these two sons get along. They're going to do the deal together. But we've seen in historical past,
House of Gucci situation.
Like things have fallen apart because of just family members and disagreements. And, you know, family and business is really hard. Mm-hmm. It can be extraordinarily successful. It can be extraordinarily risky as well. And so I'm interested to see on how, like, these two brothers are able to co-lead this ship. And I hope that they're able to do it. You know, obviously, family business has a huge history in general luxury. I think one that's also on top of mind, given, like, the recent movie, is Madame Clicquot and, like, Veuve Clicquot and, like, that history. I love her. I think she's like literally the original badass. But like in the late 1800s in France, you know, her husband was the patriarch of the Veuve family, and they were a relatively small boutique champagne business. They had a few beautiful vineyards, and it was honestly the beginning of the popularity of champagne. It was also at the sort of tail end of war, and so champagne had originally been like a drink of the nobles, and effectively it was now becoming more of a celebratory drink for everyone within Europe. And her husband died very young, suddenly. And so she decided she would take over the business. And he like basically gave it to her.
I feel like back then that was like so taboo.
That was literally
right?
taboo. It was considered illegal. But because she was a widow, it was a loophole in the law. So her husband effectively willed it to her. But it was technically illegal. And like she was sued from like for a woman to run a business.
Wow.
But she was able to keep it. And she actually, you know, revolutionized Veuve. It became like the champagne of France. And she was able to actually, you know, negotiate really tricky trades deals with like other countries, especially Russia, that was basically in the midst of like war. And she also invented rosé champagne, which became like the most popular and also like effectively the like female champagne, which was like really great. And that was the marketing they used because she was a woman and she created like kind of like this girly drink. And it became like kind of the celebratory drink for women. So really interesting and honestly the original badass. And she completely changed and like created this huge business. It was family owned for another 100 years until they sold to LVMH. Yes. So, and it became LVMH. And they also overtook Moët, who was like the main competitor at the time. So pretty cool. And I love it. And like, you know, the I love just seeing sort of family history and how it can really influence the history of a business. Like if she had sold that at the time, Veuve would not be in existence. Yeah. And it wouldn't. And
we wouldn't have rosé champagne.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
And so like I love just seeing how, you know, family decisions can really like make a company, you know, sink or float.
Yeah,
so.
And she was the OG female founder.
OG female founder, man.
That's great.
Like, pretty cool. So, I don't know. I felt very inspired after that movie. So
I haven't seen it, but I will.
It's very cool. I highly recommend it. And yeah, and a lot of it too was like she was one of the first champagne houses to focus on what they didn't even have a word for, but marketing at the time. So she, you know, hired like a head of marketing effectively, which was like who knows what that was in the late 1800s, but they like had like a beautifully designed label. Like having the orange label was like specifically so it'd stand out in stores, and like specifically so it'd stand out in warehouses and things like that. So when people would see it, it would like draw their eye, and that was like a really unique color. And she spent like a lot of money on that, and people were doubting it, but her idea was like if you can see it, you'll buy it, and it really worked.
Awesome.
And so effectively she was maybe one of the first marketers.
Wow.
Pretty
cool.
That's
awesome.
Pretty
cool. I love that.
Yeah. And like obviously we've seen family businesses in other ways too, like Gucci that effectively, you know, Gucci was effectively dying in the 90s, and then there was a huge murder drama, like effectively
that
forced
movie
them
was
to
crazy.
Sell.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
And they ended up selling it. And even though the Gucci family does own part of it, I believe it is controlled by Kering, which is, you know, effectively LVMH, but the second largest version of it. And so that's interesting to see how families can really take down and like affect. I think that's an example too of just family infighting can cause like kind of the destruction as well of a company.
Right, exactly. And like if they had sold that, you know, before it became the Gucci, then like we wouldn't have luxury.
We wouldn't have luxury today, and we wouldn't have like the Gucci brand, like so many things that it created, like even just like the eponymous loafer.
Yeah.
I feel like that like Italian luxury idea.
Yeah.
I mean,
leather goods.
Totally. And I think I compare with like Versace, where Versace is still, you know, majority owned by the family. Even though, you know, Giovanni Versace, they were like founded a lot more recently. Yeah. But Giovanni Versace, you know, was shot, and effectively Donatella's, you know, daughter became, you know, inherited it eventually. And it was controlled by Donatella for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But they are still have, you know, main control over Versace, which is good as well. So which is also completely different that even though despite Giovanni dying, like the family was still able to control it, and sort of it's Versace and Gucci are kind of two different sides, where I think like the best line I've always heard from Donatella is like, Gucci dresses the wife, Versace dresses the mistress. And that is like totally true. It's like Versace is like wild and colorful
very
and like
out there,
you know, revealing, and it like it's always been like lots of color, and it's been very wild and like, you know, rebellious, and like Gucci is like very, very classic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. So kind of seeing how two different kind of Italian families can handle tragedy, where one effectively destroyed the inner workings of Gucci, and one it was still able to be saved. Yeah.
I mean, I think these are really great stories. Of course, there's a lot more family-owned businesses that are, you know, part of luxury today. So super curious to see like how these big conglomerates will continue to grow. Seems like a lot of them had, you know, reached their max potential, like LVMH, LVMH, but we did have an episode in the past about like how, you know, they're going into more like food industry and other types of hospitality. And so I think there's a lot of runway for growth, especially if the Nordstrom's become, you know, go private. So really excited to see.
I agree. And I wonder with like department stores as well, we'll see if, especially if Saks goes, well, Saks is private, maybe there'll even be like a merger of like a Nordstrom Saks merger.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it'll be something there, but I'm really excited to see where Nordstrom goes, and especially the Nordstrom Rack focus. I think that's a really great way of like downside protection. So, I'm really excited. And, you know, and in our next episode, I think we'll explore some more luxury brands. So thanks so much for listening, guys. And welcome back to season 2.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And as always, please DM us on Instagram or TikTok or email us for any suggestions on future episodes.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.